This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. If you didn't know Henry Louis Gates Jr. before, you know him now. The Harvard University professor was arrested in his own home by a Cambridge, Massachusetts police officer. The incident has led to an ongoing discussion of race relations and police misconduct in America. Last week, President Obama, who was a friend of Gates, called the incident a teachable moment, an opportunity to look for ways to improve relations between the police and minorities. But what exactly can we learn through the arrest of Gates? Is it a special case, or does it reflect a common experience for many black men? What do you take away from the Henry Louis Gates arrest and the media coverage? Our number is 800-989-8255, and our email address is talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation at our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. And joining us now in Studio 3A is Ralph Eubanks. He is a fellow at the New America Foundation and the author most recently of The House at the End of the Road. Welcome back to the program, Ralph. Good to have you here.
It's good to be here.
So what, if anything, have you learned from this so far?
I think the big thing that I've learned, and it's something that I have been thinking about for several months now, we've been talking about being in this post-racial moment in this country, and I keep saying, well, we haven't really had the conversation about race yet. You have to have the conversation to be in that post-racial moment, to at least begin to move toward that. And this happening made me realize we are not there. There's a lot that we have not been talking about. And unfortunately, this gives us the occasion to talk about it, but it also worries me that at the same time, the conversation will stop at this news cycle and not continue, and that what we need to have it to continue.
And what should the conversation be? Should the conversation be about the arrest of this Harvard University professor, a very prominent, well-off, well-respected man? Or does the conversation need to go to some of the larger issues out there about race in this country that would encompass minorities and blacks who are much less privileged than Professor Gates?
I would like to see it get into the larger conversation about race in this country. And doing my book, The House at the End of the Road, I spoke with members of both sides of my family, both black and white, since I'm from an interracial family. And so many of my white relatives, when I would try to talk about race, would say, well, I don't want to offend you. I don't want to. And the conversation couldn't get beyond that. And at a certain point, I had to say, please offend me. Let's, you know, offend me. Then yeah. We can really talk and have a conversation. And I think we've gotten to that moment where someone is offended. People are talking, but will the conversation go in the right direction?
Well, it has seemed to me for a long time, and I've thought about this with this particular event, that it's not just that whites and blacks view some of these issues differently. We actually talk about them completely differently.
Oh, absolutely. That's.
And how do you parse through? How do you get through that to be able to get to the point where you can have the discussion, the real discussion, the discussion that needs to take place?
I think it's getting to a point where you're actually beginning to see the other person's point of view. It's continuing with the probing questions rather than dealing with things on the surface. I think what we've dealt with a lot in this circumstance have been the things that have been on the surface, not what's really underneath it all. What drives the differing perceptions between blacks and whites about these issues? And that's the thing we're not talking about. And that's the thing we need to talk about.
We are talking about the arrest of Professor Gates and whether or not this is a teachable moment. And if so, what can we learn as a result of this? And the number here is 800-989-8255. My guest is Ralph Eubanks, and we've got a call. And it's Sam, and Sam is calling from Massachusetts. Hi, Sam.
Yes. The Gates teachable moment, in my opinion, is that this is not only, it certainly is about, but it's not only about, you know, profiling of minority groups. It's profiling in general. The teachable moment is police training in being a little bit more sensitive to heated moments like that. I'm a 63-year-old white guy living in a suburban town about 18 miles from Cambridge. And in the town in which I've spent most of my life, I have had more run-ins with the police in situations just like this in the last 15 years than I did in my whole youth. I think police have just gotten a little bit too full of themselves and a little too cocky in situations like that.
Well, I think you're right about the profiling in general is an issue, because it's not only blacks who are profiled. There are other minority groups that are profiled, and I would even say that there's even some profiling done on the basis of perceptions of class, whether we want to admit that or not. I know that there have been occasions when I've actually gotten a warning on a ticket, and I think it may have been the way that I spoke with the policeman rather than anything to do with my race. And in one case, I know that I did get the warning because the officer thought I was white.
Well, what role would you say class played in this, in the case of Professor Gates? Because clearly one would think that he would have been an African-American man that a police officer might have given some deference to. Or is it a case where perhaps because the police officer was working class and he was one of these guys from Harvard that created some tension?
Well, I don't know if that indeed the tension between being working class and his being upper middle class created a tension. But what I take away from this is that what may have been the class difference here is that, think about it, Professor Gates, when it was taken in handcuffs and was released very, very quickly, that would not have happened to someone who was black, working class. It would have been much longer and drawn out. So I think that's where you get into where there's even a class divide within an ethnic group.
Right. Now, the president has said this could be a teachable moment. But what would you like to see President Obama, how would you like to see President Obama taking advantage of that teachable moment? How should he be helping us with this at this point then?
I think that the teachable moment that he would need to talk about, and that I think he has often spoken about, and this might be the occasion to bring it up again, is how these issues have come up in his own family. I know he has spoken about some of his grandmother's own racial attitudes and how he has had to deal with those and having a conversation about those. I'm a firm believer that racial attitudes are passed through families, and saying, why don't we as Americans within our families, at our dinner tables, why don't we talk about this rather than trying to shy away from it because it's something that makes us uncomfortable? But I think that's what I would like to see him do, is how can we as Americans begin to have this private conversation? This has been very, very public and I think somewhat sensational.
How does talking within our own families help the situation? I mean, you need to talk. I think you would need to talk across fence posts. You know, talk to your neighbor.
I think talking across fence posts is very important, because this is another dimension of the story that I keep coming back to. Is, you know, the call was made. Did the neighbors not know each other? And there isn't any, you know, talk about across those fence posts. And then if there had been those types of encounters, perhaps this would not have happened. And those, yes, it is important to have those, not just within the family, but getting much broader discussion where people can speak honestly with each other rather than being afraid to say what's on their minds and letting some of those prejudices, actually verbalizing some of them. It's quite therapeutic to do that, I think.
Yeah, but I think people really are afraid to do it. Have to be in a certain setting for that to really take place, where people feel safe?
Yes, you absolutely have to be in a certain type of setting. It's not in every setting where that is either desirable or appropriate.
Yeah. What about the way the president has reacted so far? I mean, has that helped discussions about relations, specifically about relations between police and minorities at this point? Or has he hurt that discussion in some way by using a very charged word?
He used a very charged word by saying that it was that they reacted stupidly. But at the same time, I understand why he used that word, because it was a very much an emotional response. I think he's often accused of being far too cerebral. And at this point, you saw the president really reacting emotionally. Did it not help contribute to the dialogue? Maybe not, but it at least got people talking.
It was honest, which is what you've been saying we need to do. We need to speak honestly.
He gave a very honest reaction.
And that's kind of rare, actually.
It's very rare, and I think particularly for the President of the United States, who is very often having to be very guarded in what he says publicly.
Yeah. Let's take a call now from John. He's calling from Wisconsin, I think, but he's... Hello, John? Not on the line. And there may be a call here. Hello? Welcome to Talk of the Nation? Hello?
Hello?
Hi, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi, how you doing? My thought on this is a little bit different, I guess I see this as being a case to have more police as opposed to security guards, because as I've seen the American existence grow to encompass more and more security guards, I've seen the treatment of people, and especially minorities, deteriorate even further. And had this not been a police officer, I don't think that we would even be having this discussion, and I don't think we'd have the same recourse that we would if it had... since it is a police officer. So that was my thought on this matter.
So you're saying we need more police? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. I think had this been a private security guard, for instance, here in Kansas City where I'm at, there's been a growing use of private security firms, and the gross violations that I've seen have really grown exponentially, and there's been almost no accountability of private security guards. Whereas with police officers, they're accountable to the city government and the politics of the situation.
All right. Well, thanks very much for your call.
Yep.
I don't know if that would help the situation. I don't know how you feel about that, Ralph. He's saying that this indicates we need more police.
I'm not sure that it's necessarily that we need more police. I think it's perhaps the way that police are trained to deal with these situations, having some of the sensitivities to a situation like this, which indeed Officer Crowley had, but somehow I think something broke down. And for me to say what that is, I don't know. I wasn't there, but something in that communication broke down.
We're talking about the arrest of Henry Louis Gates Jr. as a teachable moment. What can we learn from this? My guest is Ralph Eubanks. He's the author of The House at the End of the Road. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We're going to take a call now from Terry in Kansas City. Hi, Terry.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I think the bigger lesson here is that, police officers and security guards or whoever's tasked with enforcing rules, that they're human beings, and they bring with them all of the experiences that they've had and prejudices that they have, whether they know they have them or not. And I think that the larger lesson here is that they need to be trained maybe a little bit differently. I personally had an experience with law enforcement where I was given an incredible amount of deference because I was white, and I know it. It has nothing to do with me being female I was in Texas, and had I been Hispanic or had I been a person of color, I would have been treated 180% differently than I was. They were almost apologetic that they had to, book me and put me through the system. I can't begin to tell you that the sheriff actually offered to go and buy me breakfast. He was concerned that I hadn't eaten breakfast. I can't tell you. They bent over backwards, and if my skin color had been different, it would have been a completely different experience. And I know that this older, white, want to say good old boy from Texas, if I had been a person of color, especially Hispanic, it would have been a different experience. And I think that police officers, anyone tasked with enforcing rules, needs to have some training to be able to be more equitable and balanced when they're dealing with the public. Unfortunately, they do end up dealing with people that are, it's kind of at their worst moment. You're rarely having a good time when, law enforcement's involved.
Right.
And there are people who are emotional, and they're not going to behave the way they may normally behave. But the experience that I had really opened my eyes. I'm thinking, geez, if I had been a different color, wow, this would not have turned out this
Terry,
way.
Thanks so much for that perspective. It was a really interesting perspective. I appreciate it. And Ralph, how far does training go, though, I wonder?
I think that recognizing your prejudices is, you know, it's part of the it's part of it. I think it's at least admitting that you know that you have certain underlying prejudices. But how far it will go in a situation where tempers are heated, and in this case, I know that Professor Gates had been traveling internationally.
Yeah, he just went on a flight from China.
Was probably exhausted. That also contributed to the situation. But there's training, and also I think being in tune to certain social cues, which I think that is one of the things that potentially could have been a problem in this case.
Yeah. Let me read a couple of emails here and you can respond. One from Howard says, I think the lesson here is no matter how thick-skinned an officer is, you might get arrested if you harass an officer long enough. And the other from Wayne in Oakland, California, these are the things that need to be taught. We need to have a conversation about how a person can behave in his or her home with the police, regardless of race or class. Can a citizen request a badge number? And can she protests unlawful behavior on the part of the police. So on the one hand, it's talking about the behavior of the person who,
right,
who is coming up against the police officer, and what are their rights?
I think that that is a very important thing. I don't think very many citizens actually know how they should respond, and that's actually a very valid point. But at the same time, I also do think that that there needs to be some understanding on both sides, including with the officer in dealing with the situation, which is, in my experience, doesn't happen very often. But as I say, I often bring my own prejudices into dealing with a police officer, since I'm from the South and I've dealt with quite a few in my lifetime.
All right. Well, Ralph, thanks so much for joining us today.
Okay. It's a pleasure being here.
Ralph Eubanks joined us in Studio 3A. He is a fellow at the New America Foundation and the author of the book, The House at the End of the Road. Tomorrow, host Neil Conan returns, and we'll talk more about this issue, Black men, the Gates arrest, and this moment in American race relations. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington.